Hello and welcome to History Plus True Crime Uncovered, a podcast series that will explore all things history, including historical stories, people, and even places of interest. If you're into these topics, then I think you've found the right place. To start out, I have to give a disclaimer as many episodes are either graphic in nature or inappropriate for certain age groups. Some content in this episode may be sensitive to some listeners. Discretion is advised for those under the age of 13. I am your host, Jamie Peters. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. I am back for another episode. I know it's been a little bit. I've just been really busy. But on today's episode of the podcast, I am going to be talking about kind of a little known case out of Auburn, New York. It is the case of the Keller family murders. Much of my research has come from the Weekly News and Democrat from Auburn, New York. This article is dated January 31st, which was a Wednesday, in the year 1894. Now, this was a double murder suicide. I will go into a little bit more detail towards the end, but I do believe this involved postpartum psychosis of some kind. A woman's deed, shooting her husband, her child, and herself. But three shots and three persons dead. The husband dies, shot through the heart while calling for help. The woman, shot through the head, dies a few hours later at the hospital. The child, shot through the body, lingers a day and died. The awful act of an insane woman Thursday in her Burt Avenue home. Mary Keller, 29 years old, shot and killed her husband, Emil, 30 years old, and shot their 9-month-old babe, Anna, Thursday night about 8:30 at their residence, number 10 Burt Avenue. Adolf Hickstein, a piano player residing at 10 and a half Burt Avenue, was playing games with other members of his family in his cozy home about 8:30 when he heard a report, followed quickly by a cry for help coming from the Keller residence. Mr. and Mrs. Hickstein immediately went to the Keller residence. The kitchen door was open and prostrate upon the floor. At its very threshold lay Keller. Scarcely had this discovery been made when the report of a pistol was heard. Going into the bedroom, Mr. Hickstein was horrified to see Mrs. Keller, her lower extremities in the bed and her head in the crib of her infant by her bedside, and blood issuing from her forehead. The clothes of the child were in flames, which Mr. Hickstein quickly extinguished. Neither he nor his wife, even at the time, entirely comprehended the horrible spectacle presented. Both were excited, and as soon as he had extinguished the fire in the child's clothing, Mr. Hickstein ran to the residence of Ferdinand Sibbes, number 24, Elizabeth Street, and informed the family that a tragedy had been enacted, but details he could not tell. Mrs. Sibbes at once went to the Keller house, and several of the neighbors arrived at the same time. Mrs. Keller was still breathing, but there was no life in her husband's form when he was raised from the floor. A bullet hole in his left side told only too plainly what had happened. Strong hands raised Mrs. Keller to the bed. In her right hand, she clutched a revolver, a .22 caliber weapon. Mrs. Sibbes grabbed the infant, whose pitiful cries had been neglected until this time. Hastily wrapping it up, she carried it to her home. No one had thought that any injury had befallen the child. When Mrs. Sibbes reached her home, however, she was horrified to find a bullet hole in the little one's body in the region of the stomach on the right side. Nor was this all. The bullet had gone clear through the little one's body. Mrs. Sibbes immediately took the child back to its home, where in the meantime, Dr. Sheldon Voorhees and J.M. Jenkins had arrived. The physicians found a wound in Mrs. Keller's head just over the temple on the right side. They saw at once that there was no chance for her recovery, and preparations were at once begun to remove her to the city hospital. A call was sent in for the ambulance and it responded promptly. The news of the tragedy had spread like wildfire and a large crowd had gathered at the house, all willing to render any assistance in their power, but really impeding the physicians and those who were assisting them in their work. Policemen, however, managed to clear out the crowd. When the ambulance arrived, Mrs. Keller was placed in it and removed to the hospital. Dr. Voorhees took the little one in his own buggy to the same institution. Coroner Tripp was notified and ordered the body of Keller removed to Grass Undertaking Rooms. Mrs. Keller lingered until midnight when death claimed her. There is only one explanation advanced as to the woman's motive for the deed. 5 weeks ago, she was taken to the city hospital for treatment. At that time, she did not talk rationally, and although she had never made any threats or acted in a violent manner, it was thought best to have her undergo treatment. She was taken from the hospital about 2 weeks ago to her home. During the mother's stay at the hospital, the little one had been with her while the husband had boarded in the family of his friend Sibbis. The husband seemed overjoyed when his wife came back, and the woman seemed to be entirely rational. She, too, was happy at the thought of again being in her own home, and it seemed as if the cloud which had hung over them was dispelled. She was bright and cheerful to her husband and to her friends. The only strange action that was noticed Thursday came to the attention of a caller. Mrs. Keller was seated at the piano, fingering the keys mechanically, and was crying bitterly. The neighbors spoke of this, and Mrs. Keller made some remark to change the subject. She cheered up considerably and said she felt well. Theories can only explain the circumstances of the tragedy. That generally accepted by those who knew the family well is to this effect. Mr. Keller left his home every evening at 8:30 o'clock to go to the residence of Mrs. D.M. Osborne, where he was employed as a gardener and attended to the fires in the greenhouses. Thursday night, his wife retired early, as was her custom when at home. Mr. Keller started, as usual, to go to his work. It was his custom to kiss his wife goodbye before leaving home, and it is thought he went to her bedside that night and kissed her. It is surmised that she raised up in the bed and fired the shot that cost his life, just as he gave her evidence of his love. It is known that he made his way to the door and uttered the cry for help from the bedroom, which is about 25 feet from the kitchen door and about 12 square feet. Mr. and Mrs. Hickstein both say that the cry for help was clear and strong and that they lost no time in answering it. The baby was the second victim of the insane woman's pistol. The little one's crib was within easy reach of the bed. It is thought that Mrs. Keller raised herself to a sitting posture and aimed the pistol at the little one's heart. If she did, it was the only one of the three shots in which her aim was not unerring. Then she turned the pistol against her own head and made the wound as described, which resulted in her death. The shot which killed the woman was undoubtedly the one which the Hicksteins heard when they entered the house in response to Keller's call. Mr. and Mrs. Keller were natives of Switzerland, the former being born in Zurich. They came to this country about 5 years ago, and Keller secured employment as a gardener in Philadelphia. He afterwards went to Washington, D.C. He was an excellent gardener, and his work always attracted attention. Something over 2 years ago, he came to the city to take a position as a gardener at the Osborne residence. He had an excellent reputation for sobriety and industry and was highly esteemed by all that knew him. He loved his wife devotedly and was never happier than when in her company. This love was reciprocated, and it is said that there has not been a single hindrance to marital blessedness save the illness of his wife, which undoubtedly was responsible for the horrible affair of Thursday evening. Another child was born to Mrs. Keller some years ago, but it only lived for 13 days. Mrs. Keller was a well-educated woman and a fine pianist. The zither, violin, and numerous other instruments were completely mastered by her, and as her husband was also a musician of more than ordinary ability, care did not find a resting place on the shoulders of either of them. The family resided at number 96 South Street until 2 weeks ago, when their effects were moved to the house where the tragedy was enacted. The house was not entirely in order when the lives of husband and wife were sacrificed. It is not known whether or not Mr. or Mrs. Keller have had any relatives living in the United States. Mrs. Keller's father, it is said, is living in Switzerland. He is 83 years old and engaged in teaching music. Keller was a member of Herman Lodge, DOH, and had the hearty friendship of every member of the organization. Coroner Tripp ordered an inquest for Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock at Gross Undertaking Rooms. Mr. and Mrs. Keller, united in life, will be united in death. They were buried in the same casket. The funeral took place Sunday at 3:30 p.m. at the Universalist Church. The interment was in Fort Hill. Dr. Hickey, who attended the woman during her illness at the city hospital, was seen by a reporter Friday morning. She said that Mrs. Keller, when received at the hospital, was all run down, restless, and could not sleep. She showed evidence of insanity in particular, but was not violent. She recovered rapidly, and after she had been there for about 4 weeks, her husband took her home again. She was greatly improved, but her removal to her home was against the best judgment of Dr. Hickey. The doctor said the woman's illness was of the nature of nervous prostration and that she would need several months of quiet and rest to recover fully from her rundown condition. Three in one casket, Emil Keller, wife and baby united in death. Shortly after 6 o'clock Friday night, death came to the relief of little Anna Keller at the city hospital. It was found that the bullet from the mother's revolver had penetrated the infant's right lung and came out on the left side. The body of the child was removed to Gross's Undertaking Rooms and prepared for burial with its parents. Throughout the day Saturday, throngs of people visited the undertaking rooms to view the remains. Father, mother, and daughter were buried in the same casket, which was a special order about 4 inches deeper and 9 inches wider than the ordinary, and covered with gray embossed plush. The plate read, M.L. Keller, aged 30 years, Mary, his wife, aged 29 years, and another plate was inscribed with, Our Darling. The head of Mrs. Keller rested on the left shoulder of her husband, thus hiding from view the wound in her temple and partly covering a discoloration of the right eye. There were traces of suffering in the woman's face, but her husband looks as if they were in slumber. His left arm encircled the body of his wife while his right rested on his hip. Between the mother and father was the infant, a handsome, plump child. Its right hand was clasped by the left of its mother, while its left rested on the mother's left arm. The mother and infant were laid out in plain white shrouds, while the husband and father had a coat and vest of plain black and trousers of dark pattern. Viewed by thousands, the Keller family funeral was attended by a large crowd. The last sad rites over the remains of Emil Keller, his wife Mary, and their baby Annie were performed at the Universalist Church Sunday afternoon. It seemed as if half of Auburn had turned out. The crowds surrounding Gross's Undertaking Rooms and Genesee Street and about the Universalist Church in South Street into Lincoln and Exchange Streets and numbering several hundred. Half an hour before the time appointed, the front doors of the Universalist Church were open, but it was scarcely 3 minutes before the church was crowded. Only front seats in the center of the church were reserved for the members of the DOH who attended the funeral in a body. It required several police to keep the crowds in front from filing in the aisles of the church. It was after 3:30 o'clock before the funeral arrived. As the funeral procession entered the church, the organist, Miss Hattie Chapel, played a funeral march. the communion table had been removed from in front of the pulpit, and heavy black covered pedestals occupied the central position, and on them rested the casket during the funeral services. On the cover of the casket were a number of beautiful floral designs from Mrs. D.M. Osborne, a wreath from Mr. and Mrs. Henry Wegman, and a beautiful wreath of roses from florist Alfred Patrick. The service opened with prayer by Reverend O.M. Hilton, pastor of the church. The choir sang in German, Sweet and Quiet in Their Sleep, as an opening selection, and Reverend Mr. Hilton followed with readings from the scripture after he spoke of the sad event. His remarks were full of Christian love and sympathy and moved a large number of those who were present to tears. Mr. Hilton said that on the 25th day of last June, he met for the first time the three who lay in the coffin before him, the father, mother, and child. They were a happy family and brought their babe for baptism in this church. Quote, we were glad to welcome them to our church, end quote, said Mr. Hilton, for we found in Mrs. Keller a woman of rare intelligence. We found that she was a thorough musician when she played at one of our concerts and later at the pastor's home. We heard encouraging reports from her home that she was devoted and loving to her husband and child. Always kind words came from all that knew them, and they were cheerful and happy. We next heard of her illness and that she was taken to the city hospital for treatment. We feared for her when we heard that her mind was diseased, but as she had recovered and grew stronger, all had hopes of her recovery. The pastor and his wife and others of the church visited her at the hospital, and we next hear that she was removed home again and hoped for her recovery. We next heard of this terrible tragedy and asked why God permitted it. When we answer this question, we answer all. It was a plan of the infinite God who is full of love. Disease fasted itself on the brain of this poor woman, and since God permitted it, no responsibility rested on the woman. At such a time as there are true friends to sympathize, true friends from the fatherland, the different nationalities are forgotten at such a time as this, and there is sadness in the hearts of all here today. The choir sang as a closing selection, In Their Graves They Are Resting. The bearers were chosen from members of Herman Lodge DOH, of which Mr. Keller was a member. They were Fritz Meyer, Herman Wappler, John Munt, Ferdinand Munt, Richard Boheim, and Otto Volkmann. After the service, the casket was removed to the vestibule of the church, and the crowds in the church and all those on the outside were given an opportunity to view the remains. It was roughly estimated that upwards of 5,000 persons viewed the remains at the undertaker's and at the church. It was about 5:30 o'clock when the funeral procession left the church for Fort Hill, where the interment took place. Now that's it for the article, but I wanted to talk a little bit on what this case involves. You can easily find this case online if you search the Keller family murders of 1894. Back during this time, this is like, between the Victorian and Edwardian eras. And during that time, if women, exhibited things like this, it would be considered hysteria. Back then, they didn't even know what postpartum depression, or even worse, postpartum psychosis was. More into our era would be cases, of women killing their children during a psychotic episode, postpartum wise. But things like this did happen in the 1800s, early 1900s, where psychosis set in. And in her case, she was seen in a hospital / asylum for about a year or so, and released, and then she was taken back to this facility for a number of months and then released again, which you know, then she was allowed to basically get pregnant again. Now I can see how this happened. They had a previous child that died at 13 days old. That would make any woman go crazy. Like, she lost her baby, you know? And then she gets pregnant again. And then your hormones change again because you're pregnant. And then you have the baby. And those hormones are still there, you know? So sometimes women can get postpartum depression or, you know, postpartum psychosis, which is the more violent form of that. And in today's society, if something like that happens, you know, you would reach out to your doctor. They might put you on some medications. You know, they'll do things medically and cognitively to help you. But back during this time period, there was nothing. They didn't even know what this was. There was no name for it. They just lumped it into hysteria. And so a case like this, this is how it was able to happen. And it's really sad that this happened and that it was not prevented. But yeah, I mean, if you Google the Keller family murders and you click on images, now I just want to preface with the fact that if you do that, you're going to see the image of them in the casket together. So, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, before the funeral service, someone took an actual photograph. And so now we have that, but, yeah, it's interesting. It's got, the mother and the father and the baby basically on them, and all three were buried together. So yeah, I don't know. It's one of those cases that's kind of little known, you know. It's not a, ooh, this is a super popular case from New York. It's not, you really gotta search this one to find it. But I just wanted to do this for today's episode because I really do enjoy doing, you know, some of the more popular cases and history things. But I also like doing some of the lesser known stuff. So that's it for today. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. And as always, leave comments or send an email to historytruecrimeuncovered@gmail.com with suggestions for future episodes. Until then, catch you next time.